series, Core Values, Core. If you haven't been here or you're just coming in on this Sunday, I really encourage you to go and listen to this. Really, when we were going through, praying through starting this series, as we've been in about almost 2 months, the one thing we felt more than anything else was to get that collective we. It's not just about this is what John Meek believes, or this is what Donald Easterbrook's values are, or this is what Grace Church values are, or this is what Regions Beyond's values are, or New Frontiers' values are. But this is who we need to be. This is who what our values need to be. So there needs to be that moving from this is who Regions Beyond is, this is who New Frontiers is, to this is who we are. And so we hope as you're going through this series, you're beginning to see, yeah, this is really who I am, and those values are getting embedded in us. And today we're actually looking at the multi-generational church. And I'll read to you what we have on our website. Elizabeth, you can go to the next slide. And it says, we are multi-generational. At least we're attempting to be. And this is what it says. It says, God has revealed himself as the God of Abraham, Isaac, and Jacob. And that's from Exodus 3:16. A God who works through generations. We are a church where the old and young are valued, with special emphasis on reaching the future generations of emerging leaders. This, coupling with the wisdom of those who, with more experience, with the zeal of the younger believers, produces tenacity, vitality, and strength. Let me read this last part. It says, this coupling of the wisdom of those with more experience with the zeal of younger believers produces tenacity, vitality, and strength. There's strength and vitality when you get the generations coming together with one common goal, going out together as we go. Because, you know, honestly, older generation, even at 40, I'm 43, my energy level is a lot less than when I was 20 years old. When I was when what? 42. There you go. And you notice that as you get older, your energy levels go down, but your wisdom goes up. So you need those young people that you can grab onto that give you energy, give you strength. Spend a night with Daniel, and you will be excited again about life and going out and sharing the gospel. And this is where the verse we get it from. You can go to the next slide. Psalm 71:17. O God, from my youth you have taught me, and I still proclaim your wondrous deeds. So even to the age and gray hairs, and I have gray hairs, O God, do not forsake me until I proclaim your might to another generation, your power to all those who come. O God, do not forsake me until I proclaim your might to another generation, your power to all those that come. And I mean, that's his heart. He wants to be able to share with the next generation. And that should be as our heart as we grow older, is our sharing to the next generation. When I was a new Christian, I was about 18 or 19 years old. I got connected. I became a Christian when I was 17. And about 18 or 19, a friend of mine invited me to his church, and I ended up becoming a member there and getting connected. And it was a Baptist church, an American Baptist church. And the pastor was a charismatic. And so one of the things he was doing is on Wednesday nights, he was encouraging some of the values of the charismatic life. How do we begin to live this? And one night I was, we would pray with each other. So we'd have a worship service, and then we'd get in groups and we'd pray for each other. And so I began to learn how to hear God's voice. I began to learn what it meant to, how to be able to pray for somebody else. And one of the guys that was really mentoring me, his name was Darren. He was in his mid-20s, late-20s, and I was a young kid. And we were praying for this one young gal, and I'll never forget it. And he's praying, and I'm just asking, God, give me a verse, give me a verse. Give me something that I can speak into this girl's life. And I was like, well, I'll just open up my Bible and put my finger down. So I just flipped open my Bible and went, God, help me. And I put my finger down, and I was like, wow. That verse applies. I was like, actually, it's like the perfect verse for her. And so I read the verse. She began weeping. And I was like, oh, God, this is cool. I can't believe what God is doing through this. And Darren looks at me when we're done praying. He's like, where'd you get that verse? And I was like, well, you're not going to believe it. I just flipped open my Bible and sucked my finger down, and there it was. Probably not the wisest thing. But they began to pray for me, and Darren had a prophetic word for me. And he said, what I see is you're an archer, and you're shooting with your blindfold on. And he said, God is calling you to take your blindfold off. And that prophetic word and some other things really shaped my life. It's because of that prophetic word, partly because of that prophetic word, that I left. I was going to Ohio State University at the time, and I left school and went to Cincinnati Bible College and got a theology degree. But it was that sense of one generation, a guy that's wiser, a guy that had been a little bit more around the block, knew a lot more stuff than I did, investing in a younger guy. And that's where we see the beauty of the church. That's really where we begin to see it. We see when generation begins to affect another generation. And so the challenges, though, there are lots of challenges, and they tend to build around music. You know, it's those challenges of what is music like? You know, when I was a kid, we actually played instruments instead of punching keys. You know, or we didn't listen to techno music or whatever. It was funny. I was looking. They had a list of, speaking of generations, they had a list, top 10 list of ways that parents embarrass their kids. And the number one way was dancing. So I'm not going to dance today, okay, Elizabeth? I promise you. But here are some comments. This is from a church. It's not from our church. So let me but these are some comments from that they had on connection cards that people had written in on the back of them. One is, we need a choir anthem where we can hear the vocal parts because, in all caps, that is worship. A second one, a choral feature song is more like a performance than worship. Not real. It is not relevant. And here's a third. Those people leading worship in jeans are disrespecting God, and it sounds like a rock concert. Including lights and sounds, it's just a show. And these, and the next two are actually from the same Sunday morning. So they got two different connection cards from the same Sunday morning. The next one is, oh, it says, the music makes me physically sick. And the second one is, the energy was awesome. So here you have two contrasting opinions about the same Sunday morning service. And a lot of that does go to generational stuff. A lot of that can be what we grew up with, what we know. I mean, for me this morning, it's like going back home. I grew up in Cincinnati, Ohio. And as Matt pointed out, that's like northern Kentucky. So that bluegrass roots, the fiddle playing and the worship, it's like, yes, I can enjoy this. But to somebody else, they go, well, that's just hick. That's just redneck. You know, we need the techno, the pounding, the beats. But we can make church about us. We can make it about what we're used to or what we think is biblically based. And the challenge is, church isn't about us. Church isn't about our opinions or what we grew up with. Church is about being one body, called to reach out, raise up, and release a new generation, release new leaders. Because we are one body, called to reach out, raise up, and release new leaders. So let's look at that, the one body. I mean, there can be a tendency, and it's a natural tendency, and there's nothing wrong with it, but we gravitate towards people like us. We gravitate towards people of the same age group. You know, we can go to a youth group, and then you see the youth group come into Sunday mornings, and they gravitate towards the youth group. Or you see the 20-somethings, they all are huddled off in a group, and that's good. There's nothing wrong with that. You can see seniors' ministries, the college aides, or even MOPs, mothers of preschoolers. All those things are fantastic, and there's nothing wrong with it. But if that's all we know, if that's all we get used to, then we're missing a part of it. I want to look today at 1 Corinthians 12. I don't know if you guys have your Bibles with you. I actually use my iPad because my eyesight, my left eye when my son was born, got attacked by a virus, and so I lost partial vision in it. So lighting really plays a big part to me. But let's read. So we're going to read chapter 12, verse 12 through 27. And it says, For as the one body is one and has many parts, and all the parts of that body, though many, are one body, so also is Christ. For we were all baptized by one Spirit into one body, whether Jews or Greeks, whether slaves or free, and we were all made to drink of one Spirit. So the body is not one part, but many. If the foot should say, because I'm not a hand, I don't belong to the body, in spite of it, it still belongs to the body. And if the ear should say, because I'm not an eye, I don't belong to the body, in spite of this, it will still belong to the body. If the whole body were an eye, where would the hearing be? And if the whole body were an ear, where would the sense of smell be? But now God has placed each one of the parts in one body, just as he wanted. And if they were all the same part, where would the body be? Now there are many parts, yet one body. So the eye cannot say to the hand, I don't need you. Or again, the head can't say to the feet, I don't need you. But even more, those parts of the body seem to be weaker or necessary. And those parts of the body we think to be less honorable, we clothe these with greater honor. And our presentable parts have a better presentation. But our presentable parts have no need of clothing. Instead, God has put the body together, giving greater honor to the less honorable, so that there would be no division in the body, but that the members would have the same concern for each other. So if one member suffers, all the members suffer with it. If one member is honored, all the members rejoice with it. I think it's funny because I was thinking about this as I was reading it last night, and it says, if the head was to say to the foot, I don't need you, that would seem silly. And if you talk to my wife, not having a healthy foot, it really does play a huge part in the life. But you think about your foot, or you think about your big toe, you think about something similar, and it's like, well, I don't even think about how I use it. But you look at a football player, if he gets turf toe, he can be out for 6 weeks just because they can't plant and cut and do all the things that they do it. And it's funny, sometimes when we get locked into going to the groups that we're comfortable in or going to the groups that we connect to or that we have similarities with, it's kind of like a bunch of hands just sitting there waving around because you're not getting the full breadth of what the body is. You're missing part of it. And again, it's not bad to go to those groups. It's not bad. But we need that balance in our church life. We need the balance in what we do. And, you know, it's funny, even when you think about, some people will say, well, these old songs are really old songs. We don't need to sing them anymore. They're kind of passe. But yet no one has an issue reading a psalm and worshiping God through it. I mean, there are fantastic songs that were written by Martin Luther in the 1600s. Amazing Grace is an amazing song. But there are also good songs today. There are amazing songs. There's a guy, his name's Stuart Townend. He was Terry Virgo's worship pastor, one of the worship leaders in Brighton, England. And he sent this song. It's called In Christ Alone. You've probably heard it on the radio a lot. And he sent this song off to Terry Virgo, and Terry popped it in. And he was listening to it, and he was like, it's okay. He was like, the sound is, you know, it's okay, it's kind of catchy, it's kind of, but, you know. And then he said he went into worship, and the lyrics came up, and he began to read it, and he was undone. And if you look at the lyrics of that song, it begins to go, well, this is really who we are. This is who I am, and I can sing it out. And so two of the verses I want to look at, one's in verse 18 and 19. It says, but now God has placed each one of the parts in the body just as he wanted. And if all were the same part, where would we be? Now there are many parts, yet one body. I mean, there is a lot to be grasped when we are together, when we are on the same mission, as we're going together. We are all different parts, but we're all one body. And sometimes we forget that. We miss that. And then secondly, in verse 24b through 25, it says, God has put the body together, giving greater honor to the less honorable, so there'd be no division in the body, but the members would have the same concern for each other. We can be really dismissive of older people. You guys have passed your time. You guys aren't relevant anymore. I was a young guy thinking the same thing. You know, let us go and lead because we think we know what we're doing better. And then you have the flip side where you can look at the young guy and say, you're not seasoned enough. You haven't quite yet. We can miss the breadth of that by discounting people. And I love what God says. He said, because he's given greater honor to the less honorable, so that there would be no division in the body. And that's the beauty of it. That's the beauty of the body functioning together. You know, when you look at your foot and you say, there's not much honor in it. Bethany Meeks, she hates feet, so don't put your feet near her. She will get squeamish and run away, which is also kind of fun. But there's that sense of we can look down on some of the positions that are there. We can look down on our kids. How do our kids, how can they have an effect with what we're doing as a church, with how we're building? And yet, I've seen 10 and 12-year-old kids walk up to a person and ask and say, can I pray for you? And lay hands on them, and they begin weeping just after a simple prayer of God bless them. Sometimes the less honorable have opened doors into things that we don't even begin to see. And yet we need to grasp on to that older generation. We need to grasp on to that younger generation and get them together. It was about 7 or 8 years ago, we were at Prairie Avenue. It was a meeting, and we were talking about community groups or small groups and where we were moving towards. And it was a little bit challenging because there was an older group. They called themselves the Geezers and the Duffers. And they were 50s, mid-50s, all the way up into their 70s. And I'm not calling them Geezers and Duffers. That's what they called the group, so just so you know. They call themselves that, and Shelley and Dan can attest because they were actually there in the meeting with us. And we knew that if we changed the way we did community groups, that group would have to come to an end. And I remember Connie Sovereign, who is Shelley's sister-in-law, and she really shared from her heart. And because all of our community groups were pretty much generationally connected together. You had the young 20-somethings groups. You had my group, who I was actually the oldest guy in the group because it was mostly all of my wife's age. My wife's about 4.5 years younger than me. And as we're sitting in the group, and Connie looks and said, we need you. We need you to be a part of our groups. We need you guys to come in and help us. The women that have already raised kids and sent them out. The women, or the men that have had families, who have been married for 50 years. We need your input into how to have good marriages, how to raise our kids, how to send these people out. And what was amazing was they let the group go because they heard our hearts. They heard the hearts of the younger groups, or the younger people in the group, saying, we need you to be a part of us. And what was really cool was we got to lead a group that summer, and there was an older couple, Carl and Joanne Gove, and we so connected with them. And they were in their 60s. And it was amazing to see them be able to speak into our lives and just the solidness of their faith and to see how they grew together. We are one body, called to reach out and raise up and release new leaders. And then there's the other aspect, which is releasing a new generation. Here's a quote. This is his name's Ray Ortland. He works with Acts 29 Network of Churches. That would be Mars Hill, which was in Seattle, and Mark Driscoll was a part of that network. But this is somebody a little bit different. It says, given human weakness, after a time, this movement becomes a monument. The spirit of the church changes from hunger to self-satisfaction, from eagerness to routine, from daring new steps of faith to maintaining the status quo, from outward to ingrown. It's easy not to notice this shift. And they say about 40 years is about how long a movement lasts. You know, when you think of different movements that happen, you can think of the YMCA, Young Men's Christian Association. But when most people think of the YMCA today, they think it's a place where they can go get an inexpensive athletic, you know, membership. Or you think about the Salvation Army. You know, most people think the Salvation Army is a great way to donate your free clothes and get a tax write-off. But they've moved on from their original intended purpose. If you read some of the stories about the Salvation Army, it's crazy what they did in England. They had funeral processions down the middle of the streets, just so that they could share the gospel. The stuff that the guy did that started the Salvation Army, you read some of the stories that he has, it's incredible. But what we miss in that is we miss what I call a transference of DNA. So like your DNA is what makes you who you are. It's what gives you your color eyes, gives you your color hair, gives you all that stuff on the inside. And you get that from a transference between your parents. But we miss that transference of DNA from the first generation that started it to the second, into the third, into the fourth. And so you start having, people begin arguing about what's our real purpose, what's our real intended vision, what's our real intended part in this. And if we don't get that transference of DNA from the first generation to the second generation, movements die. And if you look at Paul and Timothy, Timothy knew Paul. Timothy lived with Paul, he ate with Paul, he traveled with Paul. He had Paul's DNA. He knew everything about it. Paul even in 1 Corinthians said to the Corinthian church, imitate me as I imitate Christ. Do you know how big of a step in faith that is? I don't know that I'm willing to tell my kids, imitate me as I imitate Christ, because they're going to imitate my good stuff and they're going to imitate my bad stuff. But Paul so believed in that mentorship, in that discipleship, in that, that he stood out on a limb and said, follow me, watch me, imitate me, and you will imitate Christ. It's a pretty bold statement. But this is where he could say about Paul, or about Timothy. In 1 Corinthians, he's sending Timothy to him. He said, this is why I have sent Timothy to you. He is my dearly loved and faithful son in the Lord. He will remind you about all my ways in Christ Jesus, just as I teach everywhere in every church. He's going to remind you of everything I'm teaching. And he sends him to the Philippians church. He said, now I hope in the Lord Jesus to send Timothy to you soon, so that you may be also encouraged when I hear news about you. For I have no one else like-minded who would genuinely care about your interests, all who seek their own interests, but not those of Christ Jesus. But you know his proven character because he has served with me in the gospel ministry like a son with a father. There was this unique relationship that Paul had with Timothy, where Timothy was getting everything around Paul. And Paul was inviting him in and then sending him out. And then he says to Timothy, he's writing a letter to Timothy, it's 2 Timothy. He says, as I remember your tears, I long to see you, that you may be filled with joy. I'm reminded of your sincere faith, the faith that has dwelt first in your grandmother Lois and your mother Eunice, and now I'm sure dwells in you also. And then he says in 2 Timothy 3, you, however, followed my teaching, my conduct, my aim in life, my faith, my patience, my love, my steadfastness, my persecutions, sufferings that happened to me. He's saying, I know you, number one. I know who you are. I know who your mother is. I know who your grandmother is. And then second, he's saying, you have followed everything about me. When I'm sending you out, when I'm doing these things, you're going as an emissary for me. You know, when we have Ray Lowe, or when Ray Lowe was here, you can hear him talk about Trevor Payne. And Trevor Payne is that son relationship to him. And when he sends Trevor to come visit our church, it's as though he is going with him, because that's the kind of relationship that they have. Trevor's traveled with Ray. He's lived with Ray. He's ate with Ray. He's argued with Ray. He's disliked Ray. If you ever hear his story about how he met Ray Lowe the first time, he disliked him greatly. He was like, who is, because Trevor went over to his house because he was doing a conference of some sort. And Ray basically said, yeah, no, we're not interested, and shut the door on him. And he was like, well, who's this arrogant guy? And yet, to be 10 years later, going to his church, 15, 20 years later, to being sent out, and now being on mission together with Ray. I mean, that's an amazing transformation. And you see this relationship between Paul and Timothy. And then he says in 2 Timothy 2, it says, you then, my child, be strengthened by the graces in Christ Jesus. what you have heard from me in the presence of many witnesses, entrust to faithful men who will be able to teach others also. So he's also challenging Timothy. It's not just about, okay, now I've discipled you, I've mentored you, I've given you who I am. Now go and entrust the same thing to others. And we get this in this generational church because there can be a challenge. When do you release someone? When do you send someone out? Are you looking for somebody? I think a lot of the reasons why YWAM, Youth with a Mission, or these other ministries happen is because there's opportunities for young people to be able to be sent out and do what they're called to. You know, a young Lauren Cunningham, who's the founder of YWAM, he went to the district manager, or he actually went to the president of the AOG Church, Assemblies of God. And he said, here's what God has given me a vision for. And the president of the AOG said, you know what, we already have our own thing. And Lauren's dad was the district manager for Southern California for the Assemblies of God. So he had a relationship with the president. He obviously, they knew who he was. And he said, I think you're better off going off on your own and doing your own thing. So that's what he did. But I think we miss these opportunities because we're not willing to release some of these young leaders with this energy. I mean, you tell a guy like Daniel, sorry, you can't share the gospel anymore. He's going to find a way to share the gospel. He's going to find a way to talk about grace. You're not allowed to talk about grace anymore, Daniel. You're just going to have to sit there. And, or even when Derek... Sorry, Derek, you're not allowed to do that. These guys are going to find ways to do it. And so as the older generation, giving room for younger leaders, giving room for younger people to grow and be able to be released into ministry, be able to be released and sent out to plant church, to help plant churches. I mean, that's amazing. And then you get the flip side where we are so blessed to have guys like Ray Lowe, John Lamferman, who is New Frontiers USA, Trevor Payne, and Steve Oliver, to be able to come and be with us, to walk alongside of us and say, I've been there, I've gone through it, now let's go. They entrusted a guy that was 35 years old to go and plant a church in Spokane. That's crazy. But they knew he wasn't going to do it alone. And that's why when we have these guys in our church, when we have guys like Ray Lowe and Steve Oliver and guys like John Lamferman and Lee Yarbrough, it's so critical to get that DNA of who they are. Because as we begin to be around them and we get to get challenged by them and they begin to speak into our life, I mean, that is when you begin to see the DNA transfer. That's why for us, getting you guys to the summit or previous years, getting you to Celebration Northwest is so key. Because you begin to see what does the rest of this begin to look like. You begin to rub shoulders with other New Frontiers guys or other Reasons Beyond guys. And I'll caveat this. So New Frontiers is the large umbrella of the churches. When Terry released the leaders because of some financial stuff and some other things that were happening, they kind of created their own names. So like you have New Frontiers USA, which is John Lamferman's sphere of influence. And then Regions Beyond is Steve Oliver and Ray Lowe's influence. And then Lee Yarbrough is in Mexico. It's a Spanish name. I can't remember it. But they kind of developed their own names. But it's all within that larger umbrella of New Frontiers. And as we begin to see their heart and begin to hear their heart, as you begin to have coffee with them, please know, these guys are not people that are going to sit off on the side that you know, if you walk up and say, could I have coffee with you sometime? They may be too busy, they may not, but they will make their time available if you ask for it. And that's where we want to, as we bring some of these guys in, give them room to be able to have time in their schedule that if you wanted to go out and have coffee with them, that is freely available. And to hear their stories and hear what their faith challenges are. And I began to see this a little bit when I was on staff with YWAM, because you would hear some of these old stories about faith You know, you'd hear these crazy stories about this guy did this, and God came through and met him here and did all this stuff. And as I began to really see some of these original guys that were called out, into nothing in a sense, because they didn't even have a name at the time. They didn't have a structure. They didn't have a lot of the stuff that they have now. And watching God meet them step by step by step and hearing their stories as they went step by step by step, it gives you faith to then go, I can make this step. You know, as you hear Steve Oliver's story about how he was at a meeting in Toronto, and God completely met him there and said, I'm going to call you out to this area. And I don't remember exactly what the area was, but to then go home, and this is a guy that made a lot of money in the business world. Leave all that behind, walk out into the middle of nowhere. I mean, we're talking, you know, it'd be like going to Bonner's Ferry. And the middle of nowhere, and they said, okay, God, here's our list of things we have to have. And then as they went to this house, God began to check all of them off. And because of that, you have the Nsutu people being changed. You have country laws being changed in Zimbabwe. You had, because they were crossing the border, they had this river, it was right by this river, and the Nsutu were actually crossing the border. And they eventually arrested Steve Oliver, and they arrested another guy named Fusi, because they were encouraging people to legally cross the border, you know, because they were having Sunday morning service. And so they arrested them, and the judge, and they, I think it ended up going all the way up to the president of the country. And he said, you know what, we need to just make a border crossing right here in the middle of nowhere, just so that people can cross the border. I mean, this is some, I mean, if you look at the story and you begin to see who he is and you begin to be around him and you get that DNA implanted in you, it gives you faith. And so when we look at a multi-generational church, it's going and sitting down with guys like Randy and hearing his story and hearing where he's come from and where God has taken him. It's sitting down with guys like Daniel and getting excited again about the gospel, getting charged with grace, getting charged and going, yeah, I remember. That's where the beauty of the church is. That's where we get a multi-generational church. But so many people get caught up in, I want it my way. I want the church to look like this. Whereas we need to be willing to adjust. It's funny, if you go and you look at, or you type in multi-generational churches, you'll see a lot of different opinions on what a multi-generational church is. In fact, I saw one that kind of made me laugh because they were going to do multiple sites, and at each different site, they were going to have different worship just to accommodate the different generations and what people liked and disliked. And they said, see, we're a multi-generational church. And I'm sitting there thinking, it sounds like you have three different churches. Not that you're one church, but we're multi-generational. And we need to go back, as we grow older, make sure that we stay young. Because I've seen some really young people that are really unwilling to bend. And I've seen some older people that have so much life and so much youth. You hang around with a guy like Ray Lowe, and you will have youth in you. I seriously think Randy has way more energy than I do, and I'm challenged by that. But we need to make sure, as we're building this church, it's not being built on our likes and dislikes. We want to stand firm on the gospel and be unequivocal on that. We want to build our worship. We want to build those things around the gospel and around biblical truth. Good theology. Sometimes we miss that in worship times. And I appreciate Dan. Dan's sitting here going, he sent text messages saying, well, I'm changing this or changing this. I'm really struggling with the lyrics, making sure that this fits with where we want to go this morning. And that's awesome, because we don't want to just throw up a worship song because it's fun, or because it has the right energy, or because it has those things. We want to have good theology, and we want to be good biblically based. But beyond that, how some of these things grow together, what community groups look like, what the morning looks like, whether we have lights on stage or we don't have lights on stage, none of that really matters. We should be able to worship if it's just hymns. We should be able to worship even if it's techno music in the midst of that, because we should be willing to see what the lyrics say and be able to worship God in the midst of this. We are one body called to reach out, raise up, and release new leaders. And so, and just to wrap this up, I want to give you two questions. Dan, do you care if we close out with a worship song? Okay. And I want to close this out and give you guys time to reflect on this. One is, are you looking for opportunities to connect? Are you looking for opportunities to connect? And by that, I mean, are you looking for opportunities to connect with someone that isn't necessarily in that bubble, that sphere that's comfortable for you? Are you looking to connect with some older people? Go have coffee. Hear the stories. Are you willing to connect with some younger people? Are you open to that? And then the second one, who are you investing in? You know, whether you're 12 years old, and I challenge my son with this, I challenge my daughter with this, who are you investing in? Who's younger than you that you can ask? I mean, my daughter hasn't quite realized as a sophomore the influence she has on freshmen. Or my son going to his friend and saying, hey, you've been talking about church, would you like to come? It's who are you looking to invest in? No matter what age, who are you looking to get that DNA through? Who are you looking with music to invest in beyond just, you know, your little bubble? Let's go ahead and close out this last song, and then I'll pray, and then we can be...